Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, still in mourning over the fact that The Undertaker has now retired. Alongside my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. And let me take this moment to reassure you that we will not be dropping F-bombs on this particular podcast. So, Chad, Michael Bay. He's a wonderful filmmaker of exquisite taste and high-intensity action set pieces. He let us in on a little preview of what they got out of that writer's room. Would you like to tell the fine folks what Michael Bay says came out of that writer's room?
So you start off by telling the people that we're not going to have F-bombs, and then you just drop this first?
Had to.
How am I not supposed to curse over this? Michael Bay has this bright idea that they planned out 14 Transformers movies.
Let me get this straight, Chad. That's 14 is more than a dozen.
Yes, and this is not counting what's already come out.
Right, and what do we already know is coming out? We know Bumblebee has got the Night Kid directing.
Yeah,
and we know that there's supposed to be a Transformers 7.
Is it 7? I don't even know what Transformers are on now.
6, because. You know, there's Transformers, The Dark of the Moon, Transformers, what was the third one?
Revenge of the Fallen,
and then Age of Extinction, Last Night, and so that would be 6, and then the Bumblebee movie would be 7.
Let me just say again, Last Night is a stupid title. I'm just throwing it out there. Since I'm about to rant.
Yes, you know. Yes.
But 14...
People got paid a lot of money to sit in a room and come up with these ideas.
Okay. Now, when I was looking this up, because I heard people saying he said 14, I think this is not so much the writer's room as what he thought out in his head. Which goes to...
There was a letter, Chad. There was a very poignant letter sent to cast and crew.
Again, he said he's done. Even in talk about it, he's saying that he's done. However, he said he would want to do one of the spinoffs, which is like, no, that leaves, the door is already open. You're just going to blow it wide open and you'll be back for Transformers, whatever number this is, and we will never be free of you. You won't go away. So, if he says that, when he says that he thinks there's 14, it just lets me know that the writer's room, everything they came up with, like, they may have kept the Bumblebee idea, but the rest of that crap, the minute he came back, was like, nope, whatever Michael wants to do. So Michael says there's 14, this is not the writer's room 14, this is Michael Bay's 14, and I want nothing to do with any of that.
Those 14?
No. I'm not going to actively root for a movie to do bad.
Aren't they actually doing Unicron this time?
I mean, that's from the trailer. I assume that's what
it's a planet-sized transformer that eats the moon.
Yeah, I would assume it. Wait, if this thing eats the moon, you know that's like, the movie's over, right?
Yes, I'm aware. Yeah. I'm aware of how this whole thing works, yes. But they don't. You're talking about a movie which is going to have King Arthur. It is going to have the Knights of the Round Table. It's going to have Winston Churchill. It's going to have the Nazis and presumably some form of Adolf Hitler. And then you're also going to have Cade Yeager and a cute little girl who has been abandoned by her parents and left to fight in a you know, dystopian future where she's going to grow up and become Rey from Star Wars.
So, hearing all of that, I don't like any of it, but there's some part of my mind that's like, okay, within this is plausible. You destroy the moon, it's like, it's a bridge too far. I can't do
it. Well, I'm going off the scene in the trailer that has him expanding out in his Transformer form as he passes the moon.
I would not put it past him eating the moon, but I'm like, but that's it. The movie's over. It's done. He won. Game over. And you know what? If that's what it takes for this to be done, eat it. Just eat it and start over. Jeez, get stupid.
It's going to have a 3-hour runtime.
Is that official yet?
That is not official yet, but we all know it's going to have a 3-hour runtime.
I didn't make it through the last one.
2 hours, 48 minutes.
I fell asleep for the last one. I went back and I watched it again. I still can't tell you what happened in that time span when I watched it the first time. No. No.
And he has no concept of, like, this is a conversation that I've had with friends, because obviously Fast and the Furious 8, otherwise known as The Fate of the Furious, is coming out next week, and everybody kind of braced for that this weekend at the box office by the slow numbers. I mean, the total for the top 12 was about the equivalent of what Fast and the Furious 8 is going to do by itself next week. But I care about Dominic Toretto. I care about, you know, Brian O'Connor. I care about Ludacris's character. I care about Tyrese. Like, I've spent 10 years invested in these people. Han. When Han dies, it makes an impact because you know Han and you've been with Han for 3 movies. It's crazy off-the-wall action, right? I mean, we're at a point literally where they're racing a submarine on the ice of Russia in the Arctic, in Siberia, on the ice, out trying to outrun a submarine and trying in the rocks surfing a torpedo. So it's crazy bonkers off-the-wall action, cars flying out of garages, you know, all this, you know, safes being pulled by cars, cars being dropped out of airplanes, Paul Walker running up the side of a bus that's falling down the cliff. Like, it's bonkers, crazy, physics-defying action, but there's a story there. As soap opera-ish as it is, and as you know, corny as it is with the whole family deal, there's a story there, and there are character development. That's not the case with Transformers. No. I mean, we've seen in other places Shiloh has that kind of ability. I mean, we've seen that Mark Wahlberg has the capability to be in a Scorsese movie and hold himself much on his own with guys like DiCaprio and Nicholson and Damon,
yeah,
and that kind of a thing. We've seen that he can handle himself in that and equate himself very well in that role, that kind of a role. And yet he's not asked to do much more than he's asked to do in the Ted movies here. I mean, it's interesting to me that the Fast franchise, each movie from 4 on, has made more money. And this will probably make less money just because of the emotional factor of Paul Walker's death taking some away, but it'll probably still make more than 6. And here's Transformers, domestically at least, losing money each time. And gaining more money internationally, but losing more money each time domestically. And I just don't understand why Bay, with his mastery of the set piece, hasn't decided at some point to, you know, to bring somebody in. I mean, we talk all the time about, you know, bringing in an offensive coordinator or bringing in a bench coach to help you with the X's and O's because you're good at fit recruiting, or bringing in an offensive guy because you're a defensive guy, that kind of a thing. Why can't Bay just make the decision that these movies need character and they need development? Because I can promise you, Knight's movie, the Bumblebee movie, when they figure out how to do that, that movie will have character development and it will have heart. Because that's what they do at Leica. I don't understand why Bay hasn't decided to put that kind of thought into it the same way he has with Bad Boys. There's character development in Bad Boys. You root for those two guys. You've seen them come together and over the course of that first movie, and you were glad to see them back together the second time.
I don't know. I mean, I think there was some of that in the first one. It's just now it's like, why? Why do I need it? I can just do all this crazy stuff and people are going to come.
What could possibly be some of those 14 ideas that are running through that crazy man's head?
You're asking me to come up with ideas from a crazy man?
Well, I mean, Unicron is already done.
Mm-hmm.
You've done, Megatron 4 different ways.
He's in this one.
Yeah. You've done him 7 different, 6 different ways, 5 different ways. I mean, there's a whole mythos in Transformers Legacy there that's apparently about to get peed on by their own admission in the synopsis. It says, prepare to rethink everything you understand about the Transformers mythos. And I'm like, at what point does this just become Transformers in name only? And it's like, so what kind of ideas could some of these 14 be?
I don't know. As, even when you brought up the Bumblebee movie again, I'm like, I don't know where that movie goes, because Bumblebee in the show is just a secondary character at best. I know he's been more... He's the second name in these movies, but... Again, he doesn't really do much.
Or talk.
Yeah, he doesn't talk, doesn't do much, so... I don't know how you build that whole movie around him, but... Because of who they got involved, that's probably going to be at least... Well, it's going to be better than everything else.
Well, the thing about Bumblebee is he's the one that's got the most interaction time with the human character in all of these movies.
This is true.
So, I mean... But, I mean, I can't grapple my mind around a guy who doesn't seem to really like Transformers, doing a bunch of Transformers movies and having ideas for 14, you know, movies. And it's like, where did they come from? Because you don't even have your own continuity straight. I mean, you start from a place where, like, Optimus and these 5 guys are the only Transformers left in the entire universe. Oh, wait, there's like 800 of them that have been on... planet Earth since, you know, the dawn of time.
Yeah, even that, I always thought that they just, like, magically came on in after this one died. Hey, this guy comes in. But, again, the first movie's like, nope, this is us. This is it.
Let's not, you know, Dinobots. No, they've just been sleeping in that stone for thousands of years, not waking up.
But I don't think he hates Transformers. I just think he likes... what he likes about Transformers, and that's just like the big robots transforming and stuff and blowing stuff up, and that's it.
But there's more depth there.
There is. But hell, you see the way he treated the Optimus dying in the second one, which, again, you could have held that off, do it after this one, have some... I know he's going to come back, but it's more emotional if I've like seen him through the movies, but... I don't know, every time I watch Optimus in these movies, I like him less and less.
Well, yes, because he continues to make irrational decisions and just blatantly murder people.
Yeah. When he murdered Megatron in the third one, I was like, yes, I agree with that one. Everything else, like, he said something in this last movie, and I'm like, Optimus wouldn't say that. I can't remember what it is.
The Kelsey Grammer, the killing of Kelsey Grammer indiscriminately?
He killed Kelsey Grammer?
Yes, he did.
Again, this is part of this time span that I have no knowledge of, even after watching it again. He said something. I don't remember. There's one movie he has, you know, freedom is the right of every sentient being or something like that. And in this last one, he says something that's like, that kind of goes against that. But Michael Bay, does, at this point... The less I like Optimus in these movies, the more Michael Bay is just like, I don't care.
And we see that. And I don't understand why Transformers fans don't do what they did to him on the TMNT movie, which is like, no. Full stop. No. This you're messing with the actual tenet of the property.
It's too far gone now. It's already out into the world, and the non-fans, just the regular people, have gotten hold to it, and it's become too popular. He doesn't care about what the fans think now. For Turtles, I think he's kind of riding it high when he introduced the whole alien Turtles thing, because he was coming off of Transformers, and like, I just did all this, and the fanboys didn't like it, but I still did it, and look at all this money I made. So he was coming high off of that, and was like, we're going to make them alien in the Turtles, and the internet was like, not today. No. And I think it's because there was like no dissenting voice. It was everybody was like, no. And I'm like, well, fine. I'll go sit in the corner for a little while. Gotcha. Transformers is too far gone. We can all scream bloody murder. No. And he's like, see them dudes over there? They're just throwing the money at me. So you go sit in the corner. I'm going to take their money.
And thank you, China.
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of this weekend's box office, that thing, that grandparents movie that you were talking about, it's actually made a decent amount of money the last two weekends.
Yeah.
49 and 26.
Look, man, I saw that movie because I didn't have any grandparents to pawn off on her. So I saw that movie. We'll notice the trend. If I fall asleep on it, it's not very good. I fell asleep on this movie.
It's on pace with Home, actually.
That's good for...
DreamWorks, yeah.
It's good for... I mean, it's not a terrible movie. It's just like... It is strictly for kids. It's just like really dumb kid stuff. There's a few cute moments, but it's nothing that's gonna...
endear you to the masses?
Yeah. Like, it'll probably get a sequel made. They didn't leave it open for a sequel, but it's easy enough to get to it.
But it's led the box office the last two weekends. Admittedly, this weekend a softer weekend than last weekend. Beauty and the Beast holding in second, now just about $25 million shy of $1 billion.
Which we knew was going to hit $1 billion, so...
It's been in the top two of the box office for the entire time it's been in theaters. It never dropped below two.
And it's always been like a million or two off from being number one. Like it's a million off this week. I think it was like two last week.
That's all about to change. 47 and 49, 26 and 25.
Actually, I'm curious to see how, if it'll stay number two this week with, I know it's Fast coming out, but...
And everything else is pretty much seated.
Yeah.
I mean...
So the
other Newt Colossal and Gifted and some of the other art house stuff's limited release the last couple of weeks, and you know the Case for Christ will make its its way to the hearts and minds of Christian conservative viewers on Easter, but I mean there's nothing really there that's gonna give it a run. I mean Ghost in the Shell's dead on arrival. Kong has made about as much money as it's going to make. Mm-hmm. Power Rangers has made about as much money as it's going to make. And Boss Baby probably won't have that big of a holdover. It fell over 50% from week one to week two. And, you know, while the audiences for The Fate of the Furious and Boss Baby are not the same, you can make the counter-programming argument, but how much of a counter-programming argument can you make when you're talking about a movie that's probably going to open somewhere around $120 million next weekend? And you did, what, $26 million this weekend?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a 50% drop from that?
Was it 12? Yeah.
Meanwhile, Beauty and the Beast is sitting there at 25 last weekend, 47 the week before that.
Yeah, it'll be one of those two that's at number two. The way it's going, I'm going to say Beauty and the Beast, but I wouldn't be surprised either way.
Well, I mean, you have to remember, too, Boss Baby also still has competition from The Lost Village.
Yeah, well, that came in third?
Third, 14. 26, 25, 14.
Well, those three, Boss Baby, Little Village, and Beauty and the Beast, are... the ones that are like competing for the same audience, more or less.
Yeah, it's there's no, they're all competing to be the counter programming to the stunt show on wheels.
But if I think it's this weekend, they're gonna do the sing along Beauty and the Beast. If it's the sing along Beauty and the Beast this weekend, Beauty and the Beast is number two. No questions asked.
I mean, it's just impressive that they're at this place where, they're locking up their spot as one of the five highest grossing movies of the year. And with Fast and the Furious, we'll get our fourth or fifth movie to open over $50 million in the last month and a half.
Jeez.
I mean, Logan opened at over $50 million. Kong opened up at over $50 million. Beauty and the Beast obviously opened at over $100 million. I mean, yeah, even if you want to go that, Beauty and the Beast and Fast are separated by like a month, and they're both going to open at over a hundred million. I mean, the box office globally is already past $3
billion. Lord, man. Well, that's what happens when you have this jam-packed March. Most of that's coming in through this month.
Power Rangers was a double-digit opener. I mean, it's just a lot, and that's why the conversations are going to happen around films like Ghost in the Shell, where it's like, you know, what happened, you know? Because you got to make money off of these. You can't just put them out and have them be done on arrival.
Yeah. So Beauty and the Beast is about to hit $1 billion. So we got that one. We already know Star Wars is hitting $1 billion, no matter what.
You could just have Luke Hamill like standing on a blank in front of a green screen with a lightsaber and not talking for an hour and a half, and people would show up.
I think you gotta give him a little bit more. So for the first hour, he's standing there with the green lightsaber waving around, and in the second hour, he takes a blue lightsaber when he's waving around. So he makes everybody happy, and then yes, they'll still make their $1 billion, and that's all you'll get.
See, that is the amazing and perplexing thing to me about Star Wars is the fact that I firmly believe now that we're in a position where they could show us nothing and just give us a release date for 9, and we would all show up.
I kind of want them to do it. I kind of want to see it happen. I mean, I don't want to see it with other movies because I think other movies need promotion. I don't think Star Wars needs anything outside of you saying, this is a date. Even, I know I watch all this movie stuff all the time, you do too, but even like my parents that they know what happens when I tell them where I'm going. They would know Star Wars is coming out. They don't want to see it, but they would know it's coming out without anything. I wouldn't even have to tell them without anything. So I kind of wanted to do it. I was thinking they might slow it down with episode 8, but it sounds like we're getting a trailer on
Celebration.
We're getting something tomorrow on Good Morning America. And I hope it's not the trailer.
But this was the schedule. They're actually, again, slowing down because we got the Thanksgiving trailer for 7.
Yeah.
And then we got the trailer at Celebration. And then we got the trailer for the ticket opening.
I think 7 is a little different just because of the first one back in so long. And they just had to give fans something. So they gave us that, and I was like, look, you get what we give you, and we'll give it to you when we damn well please. You can have it now. Sit there and wait.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're going to end up in a scenario where we see 3 trailers. I think we see one at Celebration, we see one at D23, and I think we see one with the announcement of tickets going on sale in October.
I would be all right with them not releasing whatever they got at D23, and the fans would lose their minds that they couldn't see whatever happened at D23. I'm like, nope. And just sit there until October. Was like, here. And it's not the thing we showed at D23. And they would still be livid, but then they'd be happy.
And crashing the internet.
Yeah. So I kind of want to see that happen. Random topic since we're on box office. So, this King Arthur movie that's, like, not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out next month, right?
The 1 of 6, yes.
Yeah. When was the last time you went to the movies?
Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
Birthday weekend. Two weekends ago.
There was nothing up for that movie there then, was there?
No.
Okay, so it comes out next month, and there's nothing up for it there. Okay, the reason I bring this up is because I was on Twitter, and as I want to do, I get sucked down these rabbit holes. One of the Batman sites, one of the guys is going around, and there's not any promo stuff for Wonder Woman up yet. And he said this like a few weeks ago. I didn't think anything of it. We are 2 months away, and he's like, there's nothing. And I'm like, that is kind of weird.
Now, I've been to the theaters and seen the poster.
Okay.
The one sheet.
Okay, that's something. There's at least that. Where he's in Dallas, and he's been around. There's not even the poster. So then I thought about it like, but it's Warner Brothers. Does Warner Brothers have anything else coming out before then? And I thought about this King Arthur movie. I'm like, that comes out before Wonder Woman. I haven't seen anything for it. We got a second trailer that neither one of us watched.
But I went back and watched it. It still does not help the product at all.
Okay, so they had just released that trailer, but they're still like, you know, if you go to the movies, there's the posters and
Chips had a standee.
Yeah, Chips had a standee. If you go there now, Guardians has a setup where there's a sofa and you can sit there and take pictures of stuff. And there's all these kind of things like that. But there's nothing for King Arthur. And because I brought it up, there's nothing for Wonder Woman. I'm kind of concerned about Wonder Woman, but if that poster's up, that's something they can do a big push, you know, once Guardians comes up. But now I'm really like, well, this King Arthur thing, y'all want to do, I mean,
are y'all taking a bath on this? Like, have you already started pre-screenings and know what you have?
Yeah, like, so Guardians comes out the 5th. Is King Arthur the 12th or the 19th?
The 19th, I believe.
Okay, so it's got a 2-week window to avoid that monster.
Wait a minute. Just keep talking. I'll get
wherever. So, if it is 2 weeks, you effectively, like, this weekend will be, like, a month before that movie comes out. So, you kind of need to have something in the theater. And actually, you want to have something in the theater for this weekend because Faz comes out. And that's when you'll be getting a whole bunch of people to go through and get the traffic. So the people that don't listen to podcasts like these are like made aware that this movie's coming out. So all that said, I think I won't be worried about Wonder Woman until Guardians comes out. If there's nothing for Guardians, then it's like I don't know what to think. And DC will proceed to start crushing my spirit again. The King Arthur thing, they should have stuff there now, and they need to, like get on that. Otherwise, they're really just waving the white flag and saying, it's over.
According to my release schedule here, in May, King Arthur is the 12th.
Oh, so it's the week after Guardians. It's going to die. Yeah, it's... Okay, so that makes sense now. They're literally waving a white flag. It's going to die.
And well, that won't hurt Guy Ritchie because he will just walk across the street and keep going to work on his Aladdin movie.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think it would hurt him a little bit because I think he wanted to make this movie.
He wanted to make 6 of them, Chad. Not 1. 6.
So that's got to hurt him a little bit. But then, yeah, then he just needs to go and wait. And then think about it. Wait, Beauty and the Beast just made $1 billion. I'm making the movie that came out directly after that cartoon, and everything they've made so far has made $1 billion. I'm about to get this Disney check. I'm sorry, King Arthur. And then, yeah. So you ain't never had a friend like me while he looks at all those zeros.
So, speaking of posters, what were your thoughts on the Kingsman poster?
The poster is really simple.
It came out of CinemaCon, right?
Yeah. It's really simple, and the most noteworthy thing on that poster has nothing to do with the image, which the image is just a white-black background with two arms, essentially. The most standout thing to me is who had top billing on that poster, and that would be Colin Firth. Mm-hmm. And this stands out because Colin Firth got shot in the eye in the last movie, and he's the top bill person in this movie. So, I don't know what they're going to do to bring him back. But evidently, Harry Hardy's coming back. From the things I've heard about the movie, it would seem like it's really him because he comes back and he's wearing glasses and one of them is blacked out, which would imply that he ain't got no eye. But even in Kingsman terms, I don't know how you survive a bullet through the eye. I don't get that, but whatever.
Sequence?
I don't know. I'm waiting to see. I don't know. But the only other thing that came out with the poster was like they described some of the footage from CinemaCon, and they described, I'm gonna assume, what is the first meeting between Channing Tatum's American counterpart to the Kingsman and Eggsy, Taron,
whatever. Egerton.
Yes. Because we're not cursing on this one, I can't say what Channing Tatum said, but it's very American. And I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I mean, I think that that's, you know, Vaughn came back to do the sequel, right? Or he wrote it, right?
I think so, yeah.
He didn't direct it because he'd moved on to...
I think he directed this one, too. I think he turned something down to direct this one. Let me look. But I'm pretty sure he directed this one.
But, I mean, it's interesting to see that you know, where they what they end up doing and how that movie comes about and all of that. So, So, Chad, speaking of trailers and footage, Geek.com told us many moons ago that Thor would have his hammer broken by the goddess Helena. And now we have seen Thor have his hammer destroyed by the goddess Helena. Why is Geek.com not getting credit for a week of Marvel scoops that they never had again, but they were accurate on each and every one?
Because they didn't do it before, and they haven't done it since, and it's been so long, and the only person who remembers is you.
Because so, Ego the Living Planet. No one had Ego the Living Planet. They had Ego the Living Planet.
They had the best week ever that nobody remembers.
They helped this podcast become the official podcast of Ego the Living Planet in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
We talked about that for a while, but yeah, until you say it, I always forget that they had it, and it was all this one week, but I mean, they batted 1,000, and yeah, and this, we have the teaser trailer for Thor, and it opens pretty much with that hammer going bye-bye, which, again, looking at things that we do know, after I watched it again, that appears to take place on Earth, because it's in an alley that looks like New York, and we know that Thor is in New York, and because we know he meets Doctor Strange. And I don't know where any of these things happen in this place of this movie. Outside of, there's a point that Thor gets his hair cut off. And we know that everything that happens after that point. But we don't know what happens before that.
And Jane Foster is broken up with Thor.
I guess. I'm going to go ahead and say, who cares? I know you do.
I care.
I know you do.
Continuity, damn gummit. Continuity.
It's continuity. If they say that she...
Then they would have to have that argument on screen. This is the Pepper Potts deal. If Pepper knew that Rhodey was injured and paralyzed, she would have gone to the hospital to see him, and she would have run into Tony, and they would have had to have a conversation about the fact that, you know, hey, you didn't stop being Iron Man. Same way with this. She would have a conversation with him like, look, bro, you keep leaving me. Okay, you show up for your boys, the Avengers, and then you leave me for like a year at a time. Like, it can't, long distance relationships are one thing, intergalactic relationships are another. You can't just leave me for a year without telling me.
Okay, so I'll put this to you. So you can either have your conversation with Pepper Potts, or you can have Tony having this conversation with Peter Parker. Which one of those do you want? Because there's only time for one of them.
Give me Pepper Potts.
No! That is the wrong answer.
It's good character development, dadgummit. It's a fundamental relationship to that story.
We've got a whole Spider-Man movie that's hinged on the conversation that Tony had with Peter.
Great power comes great responsibility in another language. That's all that was.
But we got between those two, and now those two are in the Spider-Man movie.
And they're going to keep having conversations like that throughout Spider-Man Homecoming until... Iron Man has to go help him put the boat back together.
Alright. So, you made your pick. Now, as a studio exec with the money on the line, which one of these conversations are you having?
I'm having the conversation between Tony Stark and Spider-Man because it's going to create fanboy orgasms and everybody's going to be happy.
Yeah. Translation, dollar signs. Mm-hmm.
Many dollar signs, yeah. Speaking of the Spider-Man Homecoming, learned a lot on this set visit that got released. First thing I want to talk about is our good friend Amy Pascal, who was very open and transparent about the process that led to this deal being made, and was very forthcoming and forthright in saying that the deal ends with the Homecoming sequel. Mm-hmm.
So...
Which still would not be fair, technically, to Sony, because it's two bites of the apple, and they got three.
Yeah, but, you know, that's the deal they came up with. And a lot was made of this because she said, you know, this is when it ends, and she doesn't know it's only renewed. But all of that is true, because you have to remember, this is like the last thing she did before she stepped out. She was part of making this deal. So she knows what this deal is.
But we have the emails. Like, her and, like, they tried to get this deal done. It fell apart. And she lost her job over the email hack, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, she lost her job to that. And, you know, this was out there on the emails about her and Feige talking about trying to get this done. And I think in part it was because of the publicity that it got after the hack. Hey, look how close they were. I mean, the freaking Russos send an email in that dump of documents. We're sorry to hear that this fell apart. We'd be happy to produce an animated movie for you if you wanted to, because we believe that this is the right thing to do. You know, I think the publicity coming off of look how close they were pushed Sony Japan to say, look, we're in the middle of a horrible PR situation right now. We need an influx of cash. This is going to be an easy fix to do. Sign off on it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah. But now the question is, there are new people in charge of...
Mainly Tim Rothman, or Tom Rothman, I forget which is...
I think it's Tom.
Yeah. Who was the CEO and president of distribution at Fox during the X-Men movies back in the early 2000s. He is the guy who told Bryan Singer, no, Bryan, you can't have yellow spandex suits in the year 2000.
Yeah, so that guy is now over Sony. So, there is a possibility that these movies end, the connection ends after Homecoming 2. However, I think... as soon as the check clears from Homecoming, they're going to take one look at all those zeros and like, fine, do some more. They will never just solely like sign like a blank document that says, here, Marvel, do whatever you want for a spot with Spider-Man and just give us all the money on the back end. They're never going to do that. It's always going to be like incremental for however many, but as long as they make money, this is going to still happen.
Now, what do you make of the argument that says, look, all this stuff with Black Cat and Venom and all of this is being done so that they can move Holland right into that universe as soon as Homecoming 2 is done with?
You could do that. However, this is like, even the casual fans understand that Spider-Man is now a part of Big Marvel. And they know enough to know Big Marvel from Little Marvel. They know Fox is not Big Marvel. So if you do that, yeah, they might be thrown for a loop the first time Tom Holland shows up in one of those movies in it, but then they're going to be like, wait, what happened to the Big Marvel logo? Why is it only Spider-Man stuff? And then they'll watch the movie, and if we go by Sony's declining track record, they'll be like, this ain't good. This sucks. So, yes, Sony could do that, but, well, one, I don't really think Marvel would let them, because at that point, during the confusion, this harms Marvel's brand. So, Disney's got more money than Sony, and I don't think they'll let that happen. But it is a nice contingency for Sony to come up with. Again, I'm waiting for this movie to come out to see if any of these things happen after the movie comes out. Unless they start shooting before July 7th, once Spider-Man does gangbusters at the theater, I don't see one of those movies might make it out, but not all these things they're talking about.
I mean, and let's talk about the set visit, because there's a lot to delve into here.
Yeah.
Let's start with the tenants of the Spider-Man world that we don't have. So there's no Norman Osborn, there's no Oscorp, there's no Daily Bugle, or references to Doc Ock, Venom,
Lizard,
Electro, or anything like that. The Spidey suit has been designed and given upgrades. Basically, the way that they're framing it is in the time from Civil War to this point that Peter Parker's been running around with Stark Tech.
Mm-hmm.
But Tony is seeking control over a kind of eager Peter Parker, who is trying to make a name for himself, and feels, I guess, from what I could pick up or from what I could gather from the ASAP visit, more of a feeling of inadequacy. Like, you know, who am I? I'm sitting here fighting these bank robbers dressed up as faux Avengers, and these guys are battling aliens that come out of a portal in the sky. You know, why am I not doing more with my powers? You know, that kind of a thing. Which is an interesting question for Peter Parker and for Spider-Man. And we got damage control brought in. Stark owning damage control, and the prospects that has for a TV show that has been bounded about. They're going the route of alien tech. You know, we saw this with the Marvel one-shots. You know, with the people finding the alien gun and using it to rob banks. We saw it in the trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming with the purple laser that was used to cut open the ATM. Looked very much like again, more stuff that flows from the Battle of New York and the Chitauri weaponry that was left around, and the fact that Hydra had some of it and let some of it go, and that kind of a thing. And they're going with the idea that Toomes ran his own cleanup company and got put out of business by damage control.
Yeah.
And that the Tinkerer is taking this technology that they're finding and repurposing it for them. Which is, I think, an interesting way to go. So yeah, your thoughts on all the information that we got from the set visit?
I like how they're firmly tying this Spider-Man into the Marvel Universe with the
small ways.
Yeah, the Battle of New York and salvaging all that stuff and making pretty much outfitting all of the villains with stuff left over from the first Avengers, which I would think.
And Civil War,
yes. Because I think Shocker's gauntlets are like used from
Crossbones.
Which I didn't notice at first and I saw it later. And like, that's a nice touch. Which would further go into me not thinking Sony would be able to break away so easy, because they probably couldn't use half of the stuff that these villains are going to have, because they're tied into Disney movies, and I would be like, no, you can't have that. So, that's one sneaky way to, like, firmly entrench yourself. The Spidey suit, it's described as having a training wheel set up by Tony. He has a lot of functions that he doesn't know about, and he can't access because Tony said it that to try to keep him to a certain level. He set, like, these parameters. Apparently, Peter's going to bust out of those and start doing stuff. One of which is that he's going to have his own little suit voice, which I'm not a fan of, because I don't need Iron Spider. I just want Spider-Man. He doesn't have to have the voice. I'll live with it. If that's the worst thing that happens in this movie, I'll be ecstatic, but I don't like the stupid voice. And as far as all those staples of Spider-Man that haven't shown up, I'm fine with it. You need to establish that it's different.
Again, think about the fact that we're talking about a movie that will come out in 2007. In 2017. Comprehend the fact that Avengers happened in 2012. And so Parker was what in this version, like 8?
Yes.
When the Battle of New York happened, and you know, so there's a ways to go to get him to the point where you would start talking about Oscorp or start talking about the Daily Bugle or any of these other kinds of things.
Yeah, I think people are just used to Green Goblin being there from the start, and because he was
J. Jonah Jameson,
yeah. But though, particularly with J. Jonah, that was when Peter went to college in the first movies, and he went to college like right after the movie started. This is his sophomore year of high school. We've got time for that. I like J. Jonah too. I would love to see how they're going to incorporate that into this. But, you know, for the first movie, you set the groundwork and then you can go from there. You've got plenty of time.
Yeah, I mean, build your world. Build your world and live in it. And, you know, we now are guaranteed a sequel for 2019. Mm. And we know he's going to be in both Infinity War movies. So, I mean,
there's plenty of time. That's a lot of Spider-Man. And it's pretty, you see, we will see Spider-Man pretty much every year for the next 4 years.
Which is going to be a good way to go. I mean, it's take your time and build. Don't be constrained to, okay, well, Raimi did his high school years in what? The first act? By the beginning of the second act, he's at Columbia and getting bitten by the spider. In The Amazing Spider-Man, while The Amazing Spider-Man 1 allegedly, you know, takes place in his in high school, really the only thing that symbolizes that is the montage and a little bit at the beginning, and then the third act, which is Lizard busting through the high school. Mm-hmm. Or the second act, where Lizard's busting through the high school. So it's not like we've had a whole lot of time with high school Peter Parker.
Yeah, this will be the most time we get bar none.
And it helps that you don't have a guy who looks like he's 30 playing Parker in high school.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom Holland looks... He can clearly pass 15.
Clearly, because he went to high school. Because he went into an undercover high school to get, you know, training for the role.
Yeah, and nobody knew who he was, and he's just one of the kids. So, yeah, he looks like a kid. If other kids don't know who he is and they just think he's actually going there, that's more the better.
Oh, man, my favorite story about that is Cameron Crowe, who wrote freaking Fast Times at Ridgemont High after a year of undercover work at a high school. Because he was young enough at the time, he could still pass for being in high school. So he went back with the permission of the guy and principal and went back. And a lot of the stories that you get from the book, which is extremely hard to find. Like, that is my goal in life, is to find a printed copy of Fast Times at Ridgemont High to get my hands on it. Both in the book and the movie, that those are kind of stories that he ran into as he was going to high school in California in this period of time. So it's been done before with actors going back to high school and pretending and that kind of thing. Let's get to some of these interviews. John Watts, our cop car director, what did you make of his comments regarding the difference in the incarnation?
Largely that I think he gets it. He to paraphrase him, he says, you know, that, you know, Iron Man and Thor are like the penthouse level superheroes, and Spider-Man's more like he's the street level stuff. And that's something we haven't seen before, because before Spider-Man was just by himself. And now you have these other heroes that'll show up in the movies that can juxtapose with him being in high school and still struggling to get along, and they're living in ivory towers and, you know, golden castles and stuff. So he gets the advantages of him, of Spider-Man, being in the Marvel Universe.
I mean, that's great and that's nice, but the other logical issue is that you've got, what, a guy in Daredevil, a guy named Luke Cage, a guy, a very, like, not likable Danny Rand, and Jessica Jones on that street level, and he will never see them.
Never.
Because Perlmutter hates Feige.
Well, I think it has more to do with Feige. I know they've separated them, and Perlmutter didn't really like him, but if Feige said, hey, I want to put the Defenders in one of these movies for like 5 minutes. Is Perlmutter really going to win that battle? No. Not at all. Somebody in one of these interviews said they wanted to at least reference the Defenders. But they said they couldn't. I wouldn't be surprised if they said names. You won't see them.
Look at the way that Daredevil and Luke Cage and Jessica Jones have utilized the Avengers. It's been... Mm-hmm. Newspaper clippings. It's been references to the Battle of New York. It hasn't been, hey, that dude Iron Man is pretty cool. Let's go do what he does.
Yeah. So I think we'll get something like that. Just to finally acknowledge it so fans can stop wigging out about it so much. Because they're never... If they were ever to show up in any movie, it would be one of these Infinity War stuff. But they're not going to show up to, like, do anything. They'll probably be, like, you know, a Passover shot of a crowd. And there's your Defenders. And they'll be down on Earth doing whatever they want because they're not coming to this movie. But here, you got your picture of them.
Yeah. So we also learned that Watts was on set of Civil War and helping to do some production design.
Yep, once he got hired to do Spider-Man, they brought him down. I guess it was when they were filming the airport scene, yeah. And the thing in the apartment. Because I know they specifically asked him if he wanted to, like, what did he think their apartment should look like. So, it's pretty cool that they, while they're in the middle of doing Civil War, they're bringing this other director who has nothing to do with it, but is going to have reins over one of the characters, and they got input from him on it, and he got to witness what his future actor and all these other things that were going to go on. So, it makes it seem like he's going to have some ownership of it. Like, while they may have cast time before he got there, it's like, here, what do you want to do so you can start prepping for your movie? And it doesn't feel like we're just ham-fisting you all this stuff.
Which I thought was a good way to go.
Yeah, it's, you know, every director wants to have their vision.
Right, but I mean, we've gotten the conversation, what was that, was that Gunn that was talking about a little while ago about they were all in the Marvel offices and somebody walked across and they had a conversation about their movie. I'm sorry. I was thinking about Gareth. Gareth talking about Ryan coming in and then pitching the movie back to Ryan. You know, all those guys. James Gunn shot, what, 3 or 4 or 5 of the Stan Lee cameos at one time.
Yeah.
And he had to, like, text the screenshots of, you know, the set and the composition of the shot to the directors and was like, hey, man, hey, Scott Derrickson, hey, man, this look okay? This fit what you're going for here? So they all work very closely. And yeah. And obviously, Feige is the through line through all of that. So, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that the Russos weren't like, hey, John, what do you think? You know, what should this apartment in Queens look like? Hey, John, we're thinking about using this line of dialogue. Does that fit the character as you see it, you and John Francis Daly and Goldstein? Is that how y'all interpret the character? That kind of thing, which I think is a healthy, creative, collectively creative process, which is what Marvel's known for.
Yeah.
So, Batman. Oh, I'm sorry. Vulture. Michael Keaton. Talking about, you know, not about his salary, because, of course, that was a big sticking point. You know, how could you possibly pay Downey if you're going to also pay what I want you to pay me? Talking about his motivations, and talking about villain motivations, and saying this, setting Vulture apart from the MCU in terms of, you know, being a good villain and not the sleepy elf.
What he said kind of goes along with what, you know, everybody says the best villain is always the ones that believes he's the good guy in his story. And that's kind of along the lines of what he's kind of describing with Toomes. He was a working guy. He came on, he had his business, he was doing well. And then Tony Stark came and infringed on his territory and put him out of business. So, you know, he's bitter, and he's got all these things that he can use to his benefit. And why shouldn't he? Because he's the victim. Tony took all this stuff from him. Tony's the reason that he's broken, all these other things. So why not use what I have to try to get a little something back? So Toomes believes that, you know, he believes he's the victim, and he believes he's the good guy in his own story, and that makes him more dangerous. So when you see that scene of him talking presumably to Peter, like, don't mess with me, I'll kill you and I'll kill everybody you know, you can believe him because he feels he has that righteous conviction.
And nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And that's all great, and that's all awesome. I just need somebody to explain to me how that's going to be entirely different from Ivan Draco. How is that going to be different from Whiplash? Because, you know, Mickey Rourke was playing kind of the same deal. You know, hey, my dad was the actual guy who was, like, behind the arc reactor technology and is And douchebag number one's dad, like, kind of took all the glory and made my guy out to be a, you know, a traitor and a spy. And so my dad died cold, alone, and penniless, while your dad left you billions and put you in a position where you could, you know, go off and use that technology to create your suit.
Well, the main difference is that
Mickey Rourke had a great performance. It just had his gagunzas cut off by Favreau in the editing room.
Well, according to Mickey Rourke, Favreau had his gagunzas cut off by
Feige.
Yeah. Well, the biggest difference, so as it stands today, is that nobody remembers Whiplash. So that's the best thing he's got going for him.
The motivations are eerily similar.
They are, but so Marvel's biggest problem in all their movies has been, you know, their villains.
The sleepy, sleepy elf.
Yeah, and it's partially by design because they like to focus on the heroes. However, it looks like we might have a renaissance of villains, like starting with Hela from Thor. So maybe with Michael Keaton as Vulture, this is like the first of the new wave.
Well, the three that we're going to get this year, Ego the Living Planet.
He has not been confirmed as a villain, and I will not believe he's a villain until proven otherwise.
Ego the Living Planet is a villain, and then we've got Keaton's Vulture, and then we've got Blanchett's Helena.
Yeah, I'm really, really...
Kurt Russell, Michael Keaton, and Kate Blanchett.
Yeah, look. We've had some good actors as villains before, but
Mads Mikkelsen, anybody?
Again, I don't know that Ego's a villain.
Lee Pace.
I'm going to
Mickey Rourke.
No, Lee Pace didn't bother me as much as other people. He bothered other people. I like him. He didn't have much to do. He was a little understated, but I liked him being understated, particularly for the end. But I'm not talking about Ego as a villain yet because I don't know and I don't want to know, and I'm going to hang on this ship of denial until it sails in the port. So we ain't there yet. But if you can't make Michael Keaton and Kate Blanchett the best villains you've had so far, it can't be done. It just cannot be done.
All right. So let's get to Spider-Man himself. What'd you take from... obviously he's going to get questions about, you know, prior interpretations and influence and that kind of thing. We get this conversation with adaptations all the time. You know, hey, look at the TV version of, like, with the Power Rangers. You know, oh, well, you're playing the Pink Ranger. Are you going to take anything from Amy Jo Johnston's performance as Pink Ranger that's going to influence the way you're going to perform the Pink Ranger 20 years later?
So my biggest takeaway from him talking about that specifically is... you know, much like we said in the movies, Peter was like 8 when he watched on TV Tony Stark say that he's Iron Man, and he watched him be all this big hero stuff growing up. Well, Tom Holland would have been a little kid when Tobey Maguire was the first Spider-Man, and just a little bit older when Andrew Garfield was the second. So he would have, much like Peter Revere's Tony, there's going to be some of that with Tom and the other two. He says it because he's very gracious to both of them. And he's like, if I have to say, I'm taking some of Toby's, he wasn't as cool, the non-coolness of Toby as Peter. But Andrew was so, he loves Andrew Spider-Man, and he kind of wants to emulate that a little bit. But overall, what he wants to do is just to be what Peter is. He's a kid that has superpowers, and any kid that would have superpowers is going to go out there and just do stupid stuff and have fun, because why not? You're 15 years old and you can swing across the city. And if he can pull that off, and I have, after watching Civil War, I have no reason to think that he can't, it'll probably be regarded as the best version of Spider-Man so far.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that helps, and I know that they get a lot of flack for Horrible Bosses and for Vacation, and those being already comedies and being a very certain kind of comedy, but John Francis Daly was in this position as a child star with comedic talent the same way that Holland is, you know, the high school setting. I mean, he made his, you know, he made his name, his legacy is Freaks and Geeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he went on to do Bones for however many years, but when you say John Francis Daly, the first thing that pops into your mind is that year and a half on Freaks and Geeks in a cast that was surrounded by talent, top to bottom talent that went on to make itself major money over the next 15, 20 years in Hollywood. From the writers and the showrunners to the actors to the parent, you know, all the way around, Freaks and Geeks produced talent. Same way here, you know, Holland is surrounded by great talent in Keaton, a good director in Watts, a brilliant producer in Feige, a principal that's already been a part of the MCU.
Oh yeah, Martin Starr.
Yeah, not well. Martin Starr is in the movie. He's a former Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah,
and I'm not certain if they found a role for Sam Levine, but I'm kind of hoping they did. But, you know, they've set him up. I think he can get to the heart of what a 15-year-old Spider-Man would be. And that's why I'm, one of the reasons I'm most excited. You tell John Francis Daly, who came up and made his name on Freaks and Geeks, hey, I want you to write a John Hughes movie and put Spider-Man in it. That excites me. That possibility really excites me. And I think Holland showed in the scene with him and Downey that he's got the chops to do it, and I think he showed in the on the airport scene that he can handle the action.
Hmm. He can handle the action.
So I'm really interested to see where they go. The set visit didn't change anything for me. The second trailer didn't change anything for me. The posters didn't change anything for me. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to make a lot of money. It's going to be good. And it'll put us on the road to, okay, well, what's his role going to be in Infinity War?
Yeah. Particularly if they're going out in space.
Well, we know he was on set for the space stuff. We don't know if he was
actually in space.
In the scenes.
Going by this movie, it will be quite a U-turn for Tony to be like, hey, just come on, hop on this ship with us to space. Because, you know, I don't want you fighting this dude around the corner, but you can come with us to space.
You don't worry about the flying man. There are people to take care of the flying man.
But those people that fly in the sky, we kind of need your little webs to do something about that.
Yeah, because Thanos is very scared of webs.
Yeah, that'd be so stupid if you brought him up there. But hey, I'm not going to complain. I want
to
see it.
Hey, we still got to figure out a way for Tony to get the phone, make the phone call to Cap and bury old hatches.
I mean, he's got the phone. The phone is like right there. I'm sure he carries the phone with him everywhere he goes, even though he won't say it.
All right. So yeah, overall, your thoughts on the set visit? Yay, nay, indifferent?
No. Set visits are normally good. They're done just so you can build excitement or
in certain cases, change the narrative.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we almost got out of the show without going too far into that, but. Yeah, it made me excited. It's a set visit, so I know, you know, there's only so much they can say, and there's only so much I want to know. But I was encouraged by everything I heard, so I'm just sitting here waiting until July 7th.
So, Chad, one of the directors that has made Marvel a lot of money is Joss Whedon. He has now switched teams, allegedly, and is going to direct a Batgirl movie with Barbara Gordon as his Batgirl. We know that Whedon likes his heroes dirty. Doesn't like them clean cut, and Buffy just celebrated, what, its 20th anniversary. So,
yeah, that's right.
Your thoughts on Whedon wanting to take on the new 52 version of Batgirl? If it actually happens.
So, the larger thought is that, you know, DC needs this. What better way to help keep changing the narrative of DC than to take the guy that made arguably the best Marvel movie, and then have him come on to a Batgirl project. From everything I've heard, it seems like this wasn't a Warner Brothers mandated thing. This was like a Joss Whedon's like, hey, I want to do this with Batgirl. And whoever he told that to at Warner Brothers had to drop on his knees and be like, thank you, God. Let's do this, like, today. Today we need to do this.
Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. No. You are not leaving this room until you sign a contract.
I am not. I'm going to hold on to your ankles until somebody gets here with a piece of paper and a pen to put it right in front of you. You're not going anywhere. Because they need, I mean, the minute this news drops, even the most pessimistic of DC fans, pessimistic DC fans and just pure DC haters are like, well, this kind of changes the game a little bit. Him wanting to go the New 52 route, I'm kind of iffy on that, mostly because since they've revamped it again, Batgirl's been, she's been a little bit younger, a little bit more fun character. The New 52, while it's good stuff, it largely hinges on the fact that, you know, she got shot by the Joker in the spine, and then she found her way back. But dealing with that kind of trauma the whole way through, you know, I don't know if that's quite what we want to do. But if that's what Josh wants to do, hey, go for it. I know he can handle it in a manner that doesn't come off as, oh, I got shot. Oh, woe is me. I'm going to punch you in the face till you bleed. Oh, woe is me. I think he'll break that up some. But all in all, this is good news for DC if it happens. And if everything continues to happen like this, it seems like they're turning the iceberg. They just have to get over the Justice League hurdle and then finish turning the iceberg.
Yeah, Birth, Movies, Death had a really good piece about that. And we didn't talk all that much about the trailer that dropped for Justice League. We talked some about it, but, you know, there's obviously been a lot of news going on. It's too far down the road, man. I mean, like, they were started shooting, like, 2 months after Dawn of Justice. Like, you know, Zack's on that ship. That's Zack's ship. As you've said on this podcast before, Previz was already done. You were locked into certain set pieces at the end. That trailer, as you said, feels like 300. It feels like Snyder's movies. It's going to, because it's Snyder's movie. And we're all going to have to live with that. Now, the hope is that we don't get all 5 jokes in the trailer. That there are more witty witticisms than that. But fanboys freaking out and losing their minds and pointing up and saying, see, look at the trailer. The trailer looks just as... Of course it does. It's the same guy directing. It's the same guy who had his creative vision. It was too... Unless you wanted to delay Justice League, you couldn't fire Zack and not delay Justice League by a considerable amount of time. Because it's not something like Marvel where you can just, hey, Edgar Wright's going to leave in April and by mid-May we've got, you know, Peyton here and we'll just move shooting back by 3 weeks. Like, that's not going to be the case on a Justice League movie. You've got schedules of actors, you've got, you know, studios time that you have to book, you've got, sets already being built. Like, Previz is already underway. Like, that's a whole lot to just, like you said, turn around. You know. So, you know, people freaking out from and yelling from the highest mountaintop about, oh my goodness, you know, Justice League looks exactly like... Of course it does. Like, yes, the set visits projected a sense of positive momentum that they needed at the time. But to think that you're going to see a complete course correction from a movie that started shooting 8-12 weeks after the last movie got completely trashed is a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah, that's their biggest thing, is that, you know, when people are expecting this big, huge course correction in Justice League, and they shouldn't, because, as you said, it's Zack's movie. There's nothing you're going to do about that. The best case scenario for Justice League is that they did just enough that they can survive Justice League.
Just enough so that you don't hate the characters and you'd like to see them again.
Exactly. Get through Justice League.
Wonder Woman can put you in a place of positive momentum and good feeling. Justice League can at least get you to a point where, okay, I'd like to see an Aquaman movie. Okay, I'd like to see Affleck's Batman have his own solo movie. I'd like to see Flash and Cyborg team up again. You know, leave me in a position where I can want to see these actors again.
And that's kind of where we're at. I hate that they keep doing it, but, you know, they keep announcing all these other movies that are coming.
The 9 other projects with, like, you know, now it's Batgirl, it's Suicide Squad 2, it's Man of Steel 2, it's the solo Batman movie, it's Suicide Squad 2, it's Flash and Cyborg movies, it's Green Lantern Corps, it's Birds of Prey or Gotham City Sirens. I mean, that's 8 or 9 projects that are just kind of like the Rock schedule. It's just floating out there, and we'll shake it out and see what comes out.
So, I think, I think what's happening is that, you know, that schedule we had before.
The one that was announced on the investor call back in October of like 12 or 13, whatever.
13, yeah. They took that out back and they shot it. It's gone. It's dead. So, all these other movies they're announcing, they're trying to get their ducks in a row for after Justice League. Because they're DC, because they're Warner Brothers, they won't ever just not line them up first. And part of that is because there's so much ill will towards them altogether. And they're trying to get positive word going into these two mammoth movies. Hopefully Wonder Woman is good. If Wonder Woman is a 3-star match, we always keep saying that it is. I think they can lay off on saying anything up until Comic-Con and then lay off.
Which is, what, three weeks, I think?
Wonder Woman is, like, the first week in June.
Yeah.
So Comic-Con is normally, what, the last week in July?
According to my calculations here, Wonder Woman is June 2nd. Comic-Con is generally the 21st. It's, like, the weekend of the 21st.
So 6 to 8 weeks, somewhere around there. So they can ride, Wonder Woman's good, they can ride that to Comic-Con. Then they can go ahead and say these things if they want. And then lay low until Justice League.
You ain't going to have any competition at Comic-Con this year, so.
Yeah, so own it. Do all the things. If you want to make your announcement about all these movies and give dates, do it. And then those things can be on the calendar and solidified. And if Wonder Woman's good, everybody be feeling good. So if Justice League is a letdown, you're still like, oh, but we have these things to look forward to. I think that's their best case scenario. They're just in a bad place because they're in a bad place because of Justice League. If there was no Justice League, I think things would be a lot better off because then they could truly course correct after Wonder Woman and completely, you can't forget about Batman vs. Superman, but, you know, scare it in the way they want to go. I think all these movie announcements that we keep hearing are the way they want to go.
Well, we keep saying there's no way Zach can stay on after Justice League, but, I mean, they could be crazy enough to say, okay, Justice League Part 2. Stephen Wolf is done, so we're going to move on to Darkseid.
The only way Zach can stay on is if Justice League is over 65% on Rotten Tomatoes and it makes $1 billion. It has to be both of those things.
Because you know how well Rotten Tomatoes is the plague of all that is good in society.
I've heard. And it could be the plague of society, but for right now, it is what runs the roost, so you just kind of got to go with it. So, over 65 and $1 billion. That's the combination.
Other than that, he's looking at producer credit for life.
I don't even know for life, but yeah, he'll get producer credit for a while at least.
All right, so Chad did. I want to read you a quote. Quote says, open quote, "We're starting," the actress excitedly told The Hollywood Reporter at a screening of her new movie, held Monday night. "We're starting training, and we're shooting. I probably can't say anything. We will actually be shooting it by the fall." What movie do you think this quote is attributed to? Which actress? Which actress and what project is she referring to?
All right, because I already know the answer. I'll just say it. This would be the wonderful Sigourney Weaver. And she's talking about a franchise that neither one of us believes that ever going to see the light of day. And that would be Avatar.
We need to see pictures of slates and things in front of cameras.
I don't want to see a picture of a slate. No, I don't even need to see pictures of them in the green screen suits. I need to see before pictures of them in the green screen suits, and I need to see those blue rabbits put on the screen so I can know that we've actually gone to the computer phase. I don't believe anything until I see those things, because you can put anybody in that stupid suit. I need to see you actually make a fully rendered blue rabbit doing what that person does so I can believe you. So we're talking about, I need to see like a trailer first. I don't believe nothing short of a trailer. Say whatever you want, James Cameron, but I don't believe you.
Now, James, in his defense, has pushed it back another time because he got busy building Avatar Land.
Whoopee.
And he took a year and a half of those people's lives in a writer's room, working on all those scripts. And now he's free of director. He's free of writing jail. And now he can go create and make his movie. But he can't make his movie right now because he was busy creating a theme park ride.
Okay, so in July, what's going to be the excuse that they're not shooting until December?
I don't know, man. Like, we commented on the press tours coming up for Guardians. Zoe's going to get asked about this. Be interesting to see what she has to say. You can't recast her. I mean, you could, but it'd be really hard to recast her.
Yeah. I know she...
Especially considering she's the Mama Corleone of the Blue Corleone family. Because, you know, the Avatar sequels are going to be greater than the Godfather trilogy.
If I'm Zoe, I'm hoping that Guardians is as good as everybody says it is, and that these people that are going to ask me these questions have seen Guardians first, so they can forget about the blue me and focus on the green me. Because, I mean, what's she going to say? Yeah, I've talked to James. Yeah, we're going to do it when he's ready. He says he wants to do it in August. Okay. I hope she shot her Avengers scenes by then. Because guess what, James? If it's between you and Avengers, Disney always wins. Matter of fact, you just brought one of your brought the property to Disney. Disney always wins.
I think it's just going to be interesting because this is something that he's passionate about, and we've talked on this podcast many times before. No executive is ever going to tell him no when he has the two highest grossing movies of all time.
Until he bombs out.
So, I mean, 10 years is a long time between films.
It really is. But there's like no, absolutely no hunger.
There's no cultural footprint.
Nothing. But it's going to come out and people are going to see it and it's going to make money. But will it be the same thing as the first one?
3D is no longer a thing.
Whatever new technology he's working on, it has to be beyond 3D. And it has to get the feeling people got when they saw that in 3D, it has to be translated to the second.
And therein lies the problem. At both ends of the technical spectrum, you run into problems. Filmmakers like Tarantino and Nolan want to shoot their movies in 70mm and want them projected in 70mm where there aren't a lot of 70mm projectors running around. Filmmakers like Cameron and Jackson and Lee want to make their movies in ultra high speed 4K high definition, and there's just not a lot of those projectors running around, and it's not really financially feasible for the theater owners who just met at CinemaCon to invest money in a whole bunch of new projectors that can only run one movie. So, you know, the thing that I think he's focusing on now is the water effects. We've talked about an Aquaman movie. One of the reasons an Aquaman movie's been so challenging to make over the years, aside from the lampooning of the character, has been the technical aspect of a movie having to be all underwater for a good bit of it. Mm-hmm. Now, water effects have come a long way, even since Phantom Menace, but they're still not great.
Yeah.
And whenever he talked about Avatar 2, just Avatar 2, not 3, 4, and 5, just Avatar 2, he was talking about it exploring the oceans of Pandora. So if you're going to actually explore the oceans and the ocean people of Pandora, you're going to have water effects, and they're going to have to be top-notch. So if you're looking for a new area of effects to work on and just surpass, that would be the area that you work on and surpass. Not ultra 4K, 140 frames per second definition.
I agree.
But, I mean, he has to put something forth. I mean, he, dude can't just, you know... Because, again, with the other problem that we've running into is, as we said on this podcast before, Jackson may have filmed the Lord of the Rings trilogy all at one time. They came back for reshoots every year. Because, really, all he had was one complete movie. Everything else was in pieces and parts. And the studio really didn't want him having enough money to make three movies because they didn't know if the first one was going to work. It was because Fellowship worked that he got the money to go back and do the pickups for Two Towers. He got the money to go back and do the money for the shots for Return of the King. So, I mean, if he wants to, I will cut him a check to make an Avatar 2, and I'll withhold the money for 3 and 4. He can get the shots, but we'll do the technical aspects of those after.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan and a fair trade.
But, I mean, you know, Scorsese had Silence as a passion project for 30 years trying to get it made. But he went and made other movies. You know, Cameron does Avatar, does Titanic, and takes a break from 1997 to 2009. You know, he makes Avatar, and now he's taking a break from 2009 to 2018 or 19 for Avatars 2. I mean, you're considered one of the sentinel filmmakers of your generation, and you're only making a film. You're at a point now where you're only making a new film every 10 years.
Well, when you have the number one and number two box office champs, you can kind of do that.
So, in the end, do we believe that Sigourney Weaver will be filming a movie in the fall called Avatar 2?
This is where this being an audio medium doesn't come in, doesn't help anything, because I wanted to give a look on my face that will tell you my answer, but since you can't see it, no. Hell no.
You can't.
No, you can't. No.
All right, Chad, so that'll about do it for this week's podcast. On Thursday night, the two of us will be seeing Torpedo Movie, which means there will be a podcast about Torpedo Movie.
Yay.
And then after Torpedo Movie is over, we have two or three more weeks to get through until we get to Dancing Baby Groots.
Yes, what should be?
The 21st and the 28th and then the 5th. So three weeks.
Can't wait. I'm trying to decide if I'm ducking the soundtrack when it comes out in like a week or two. Do I want to know the soundtrack or do I want to wait for the movie?
I think you want to wait for the movie because you know how much time and investment he put into Awesome Mix Volume 2.
Well, he answered this specific question on Twitter. He was like, it depends. You know, if you're the type that can watch and listen to it and you can take it, go ahead. If you want to wait and be surprised, wait and be surprised. And then Chris Pratt chimed in and was like, I just saw it. Wait. God dang it, man. I kind of want to see it. But, so, yeah, next week I'm going to know what the soundtrack is because I can't stop myself.
All right. That'll do it for this week's episode of the podcast. The Undertaker is still retired as of this moment. If you'd like to keep up with us on Twitter, you may follow me on Twitter at @BCWTigerFan.
And @TheMesh Theory.
Thank you very much and have a pleasant Roman Reigns free day.